Computers. All right, everybody. So good morning, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Once again, we're here to the podcast, Mujer de Éxito Unbounded, Woman of Success Without Limits. And I'm so excited, guys, to have here on the podcast today. And if you're just joining us, let me tell you a little bit about me. My name is Marty Angel. I am the Empowering Latina Coach. I am the creator and the host of Mujer de Éxito Unbounded, Woman of Success Without Limits. And today I'm so excited to have on with me a very recent friend that we have just kind of connected and we have clicked. And I don't know about you, but being an energy worker myself, it is just freaking amazing when you feel like the person that you just met is on the same frequency as you are. So without further ado, I want to introduce my co-host today, Danielle Rogers, who is an inspirational life coach, lover of humanity. I love that when she said that, lover of humanity, right? It's like, oh yes. So
yay!
Hello.
I just have to tell your listeners this. If you all don't know Marty well, I couldn't remember how we connected, but we connected because she reached out to me from a post that I posted in a group that we're in, and I was actually crying out for help. And everybody sent, you know, nice messages, and it really warmed my heart, but Marty took it a step further and personally messaged me. And then, was it like maybe a week or two later? You actually followed up and checked on me.
Yep.
And that so warmed my heart. So if you all have not connected with Marty yet, I say now is the time. She's totally a lover of humanity. And I totally agree. Marty, we have the same heart, same vision, same inspiration. And I am honored to be in your presence at this time.
Oh, sweetheart. Me too. So let's talk a little bit about what's been going on. Craziness. Yes, we're in the COVID time. And yes, you know, a lot of things have happened. And for those of us that are on the podcast, I actually identify myself as a multiracial woman. So, but for the longest time, I didn't, because it's only been approximately maybe very recently within the last 10 years that I realized that I wasn't fully Hispanic, right? And so I identify with the word Hispanic. I used to identify with the word Mexican. And, you know, it's just Hispanic to me in encompasses many more. And now with everything, I'm a Latina, I'm a Latinx, you know, which means that all Latin countries, all of that, and, you know, and America included, because there's a lot of Latinos here in America. And that's how I identify myself. So Danielle, I have two questions for you. How do you identify yourself? And I heard through the grapevine that somebody calls you Mama D. Can you tell us about that?
Identify myself as a Black Mama all the way. Mama D is an affectionate term that I have two adult children, and their friends have called me that for years, and I have adopted that term. I love it. I just have a problem when people our age, and that's over the age of 30. No, I'm joking.
Yes.
I don't have a problem with anybody calling me Mama D, but to me, because I do take being a mom extremely seriously. I honed that gift. I didn't feel like I was gifted for a lot of years before becoming a mom. And I've been a mom since I was 19. So majority of my childhood, I felt lost. And but the moment I became a mom, all of a sudden, my purpose clicked in. And so when someone attaches Mama D to my name, that loving, that empathetic, that mom comes out, and that Mama Bear comes out. So I will attack if you are attacked and anybody that calls me Mama D. And not many mature people want that Mama D in their lives. So I tell them when they start calling me, I said, okay, I just want you to know there's a responsibility that comes along with calling me Mama D on my end. So it's up to you if you want to accept it or not. But the race that I am identified with is Black. And I don't say African-American. And I know that is the term that we're supposed to use. When I found out there were Blacks here in the United States, everybody didn't come. Well, I mean, all of mankind originated from Africa. So clearly we're all a part of African. But to put me in that box and say, you know, your tribe came from, until I know for sure that that's where my forefathers and my ancestors came from, I'm Black and I am proud.
That's so, you know, that is so, so cool, because, you know, it was for the longest time, it was like, what do I identify with? And you finally have to come to that place where you identify what feels good to you. And that's what I want my listeners to say is like, so what, you know, and you identify how you feel good. I feel good being a Latina. To me, that means, and part of the Latinx. And why for me? Because one of the things that many people don't know is that I am a mother of a transgender. So for me, that means that anybody, everybody, and I've been an educator all my life, and I don't care if you're purple, Black, green, or blue, and what your sexual preference is, you are my child.
Yes.
And you are, and that's why people call me Marty Angel. They always say, you're my angel.
Okay, so I don't know about the transgender, and we're going to have a whole nother conversation on my talk show about that. Yeah. We got some great things to discuss. That is phenomenal, Marty.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, and it's just,
if I didn't love you already.
So it's just like, okay, we just need to talk about this, and we need to, you know, one of the things today, I wanted to share with the audience that we're probably going to need to do a 3-part series on this thing, because we can't cover everything in the 30 minutes that we have. But I would love to, you know, to explain that we're going to cover as best we can what racism is today. And then the next time you hear us, we're going to talk about colorism. And then the next time you hear us, we're going to talk about ageism.
Yes.
Those are very prevalent topics right now that, yes, they kind of mesh, but then at the same time, we need to discuss what they mean to us out here in the trenches. You hear a lot of big mentors speaking about it, a lot of big, you know, Oprah, she's good and everything, and then who they touch is still what I call the white foam up on top, right?
Yes.
But this podcast is about us. We are in the trenches and we have lived it. So what we're going to speak about today is is not what you're going to find in the dictionary. It's not what you're going to find in the encyclopedia. It's not what you're going to find, you know, anywhere else other than this is where we get raw, we get real, and it's about us.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I'm excited. And let's have at it.
Yeah. So let's talk about, what is it? What's racism to you?
The definition of racism probably isn't the same thing that I would define it as. Right. I'm going to call it just pure hatred. That's really what it is. I believe it's hatred wrapped up in fear.
Right.
What you fear and you hate, all of a sudden, you're considered a racist. And when we get into colorism, we'll talk about how racism happens even within the same culture. But we're talking present times with this, the white police on Black males specifically. It's been some females as well. Now we're going to go back to slavery days. I don't know if everybody is aware that the police department was really created policing the slaves. They were the ones that were going out and catching the runaway slaves and bringing them back. Now, of course, we've reformed to now they're out to protect and serve. But if you get down to the root of it, that was their job. So what they did 400 years ago, they're just still doing now. They're trying to keep what they feared. They knew that if the blacks, those strong Africans, would get together and rise up, they would all be slaughtered. So they had to keep them in control. So now bring it to present day. 6'2", 250-pound black man is jogging, minding his own business. And there's a call that goes out saying that I just saw a black man running, and this particular guy fits the description. One, they have the fear because he is black. And two, they have the hatred because he is black, and he may overtake them. Before they even go after him, they may actually even call for backup. They haven't even stopped and apprehended him to find out what's going on or whatever. So when you have a group of people that are policing, and let's take it away just from the police, because I promise you, I'm not bashing the police. I know police personally. I have some in my family. They're all police are not bad, just like all blacks aren't thieves and thugs and whatever. But let's take it away from that. Let's just take it with my race. We have such strong genes, strong determination, beautiful group of people, and we were easily controlled. Mm-hmm. So now that we are educating ourselves, we're gaining all kinds of notoriety, we're spanned out, of course, all kinds of forums, from artists to sports to we're on TV. You can't control us as much. So what do? They take those that they think are weaker, and I say they, because racism is in the workplace as well. It's on the streets. I've dealt with it on a job before. We all have, I'm sure, us ethnic people have a certain degree. And you gotta call it what it is. It's fear. It's fear and hatred.
I agree, yeah. And fear tends to turn people into, I want to say, I was raised Catholic, so I'm going to say the word. It tends to turn people into the devil, if you will.
Yes.
Right?
I agree.
And so what is racism to me? Let me give you an example of racism. When I was about 4 or 5, my mom, who's blonde hair and blue eyed, we went to the grocery store. Right. And this was my first time ever really just feeling and living and ingesting and being suffocated by the word racism, by that moment in time that defines how you're going to behave. Because I was there holding my mom's hand, and it was back in the day, you know, it was small town. And we walked into the grocery store, and the gentleman looks at mom and says, "Gloria, oh, it's so nice that you're bringing in your maid's daughter with you."
Oh, my Lord.
And the reason she thought that is because, you know, I have dark brown hair. Right now I've got highlights, but mm-hmm. I have dark brown hair. I have, you know, hazel brown eyes. And I was a sun bunny, still am, whenever I get a chance. Mm-hmm. I live in Hawaii mm-hmm. part-time. And I'm always, always, you know, dark, because my dad was half Greek. So I'm that dark Greek looking, you know, that bronzy bronze, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And in fact, as a matter of fact, when I was little, everybody in my family would call me black. They would say negra. Because I was negra, and it wasn't
an insult. It was just your skin was darker.
So that they would call me negra, and then that way they could, you know, point me out from all of my other cousins, and you know, because it was like, okay,
wow,
first negra, you know, and then it was just.
But just the fact that this store clerk assumed that you were a child of the hired help. Yep. What an assumption.
Exactly.
Wow. And how old were you?
4. I was four.
Wow.
I was four. And I know that sounds weird because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people say, oh my God, you were four. How do you remember that? You know, I remember a lot of things and, you know, and it was just.
But that was a defining moment though.
It was.
Yeah. This person is in your four-year-old brain saying this is not your mother because you're too dark to be her child. That's a defining moment. Wow.
And you know, how does that relate to children nowadays? Well, you know what it did? What I realized what it did is that I looked at that as separatism, right? I looked at, I was separate from mom. I was separate from mom. So what that did is what that created for me is a belief system that because I wanted my mom to be real proud of me, and she was, she said, this is my daughter, but because of that, I realized that I had spent my time trying to prove that I was worthy of my mom. Not because my mom didn't think I was worthy.
No, because someone else, they deposited that seed in you.
Yeah.
Of insignificance. Think about it.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
So.
How did you overcome that? I mean.
You know, who said I overcame it, right?
Yeah.
Actually,
wow.
You know, a lot of things are coming to light right now, to light. We're in the time, you know, I've always been a light worker, as I think you are too. And it's just now coming into, when I wrote my book, when I wrote my book in 2000 and published it in 2007, there was a lot of awakenings that were happening, but I firmly believe that everything happens for us, not to us.
Yes.
And so there's awakenings, and now I feel like I'm walking into a more of an awakening because of what's happened than ever before.
I agree. I think this is the great awakening. 2020 sounded like it was going to be a phenomenal year. Perfect vision. 2020, I can't wait. And boy, did we get hit with a global pandemic. And it was like, okay, let's backstroke. 2020, go away. And then the whole George Floyd thing. But can I tell you, Madi, this is the first time in my life. I will be 58 years old next month. First time in my 58 years that I am proud to be a Black woman.
Yeah.
And it's because of what's happening. Now, I'm sorry for the stores that have been looted and the violence that's taken place, but the protesting has gotten us further than where we've been in the last decade as of Blacks in America. And a lot, and I'm speaking to other Blacks like me, and they're like, I can't be silent anymore. I'm like, me neither. That was me. I was always silent. I hushed racism. I said, oh, they're not racist. That's not what they mean. And I took up for people and had blinders on, but the blinders are off. There is a scripture that says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Uh-huh.
And so people would say, oh, I didn't mean that, or employers that, well, let's put it this way, networks that's having their stars apologize for saying something. Apology is not necessary because it was in their heart. So my goal right now is to look at where they are, just observe. Okay, that person is a racist. Where will they fit in my life? And if they don't, I just keep stepping. But if I have to interact with that person, I recognize where they are. And either my goal is to shine so much light that they recognize their darkness and they're ready to change, or they just get the hell out of my way.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm no longer apologizing for them for being racist. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes total sense. So it's and you know what it's done for me is one of my besties, he and I, I was a very new teacher and he was the school security, big Black guy, you know, but gorgeous green eyes, but big black eye, 6'4", like 260 pounds, right? And he was the security guard, and these two young ladies got in a racial fight. It was, you know, it was very, very heated. As I was trying to teach algebra and write on the board, he was coming by. He heard the slurs. I heard the slurs. I turned around before I could actually, turn around. They were at each other. He ran in and he grabbed the two girls. This was, they were like maybe 15 or something like that. He grabbed one under here, one under here, you know, one under each arm. And he stands up and the girls are going, "Put me down. Put me down." And it was like, and he looks at me and he turns his whole body, still holding the girls, to look at the teacher who couldn't control her classroom. And, you know, and then he looked at me and he's got this little voice, very calm, very quiet. And he looks at me and he says, "Miss you," because my last name was Urias. And so he says, "Miss you, you need to be more proactive in policing your students or they're going to eat you alive." And so he walked out with the girls, you know. And it was like, oh my gosh. And so, you know, it's just been so, you know, and that was the first day of the best friendship ever. Oh. And to this day, we're still friends and he's in LA and that type of thing. And, you know.
Is he married? Because you mentioned him before. He sounds fine.
Oh yeah, he's fine, honey. But no, he's not married. He's actually looking. I think he's I think he's 59 or 60. So
I think you need to introduce us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he is an amazing man. And we have had talks and we have seen, you know, each other, and we've even had fights, because when we get into colorism, we will both talk about that, because, you know, we have witnessed in the education system, the racism that happens in the education system.
Wow.
You know, when you've got a teacher here, and here's another thing, when I was in, you know, when I was in middle school, that racism is there. And then, you know, when people don't even realize they're racist, they just,
yes.
You know, especially when here's the dismantling of the education system. Not every teacher out there got into education because they want to live a life of
service, because that's really what it is. Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say the example.
Example. Ooh.
A life of example, because that's what I think a teacher is a life of example.
I agree.
And not every teacher wants to do that. Many people, as a principal, I found out that many people came into education because they wanted the 3 months off.
Are you serious?
Yeah. 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 And, and it gets even uglier when you're in the classroom. But I remember this one time when I was, I had a bestie when I was young. We were 12 and we were in middle school, or back in the day it was called junior high.
Right, right.
And I want to say that my mom dressed me pretty. My mom knew how to make a Walmart outfit look like Nordstrom's.
Yes, right? Go mama. Mm-hmm.
Right? So she always had me dress really nice and everything. And then I had a bestie whose mama did the same thing. And, you know, and we would always, you know, she would come over to my house for Mexican food. I'd go for her house to grits and all of this stuff that her mama used to make.
I love it.
You know, and, and then we would buy dresses. We would buy, my mom was a seamstress, so she would go and buy the material, and my mom would make the dresses, and I'd have a red one, and she'd have a, you know, whatever color, but it was the same thing. And we were sitting one time, we got out of, there was a big racial fight, big racial fight. We were in seventh grade. I remember us two little girls, we were scared. And I didn't know she was black and she didn't know I was brown.
Wow.
Seriously. And we were just besties. And so we, in order to get away from that racial tension and that racial fight and the, you know, and the cholos and the big black dudes fighting and the white dudes and everybody, it was just a big racial fight. And so we went inside a classroom together, to our next class together, and we just were sitting there, and in walks the white teacher, and she looks and she says, a black girl and a brown girl sitting together in a classroom, unsupervised, let me check my purse.
Oh my Lord.
And then she proceeded to send us to the office. So I don't ever know if there was something missing or anything like that. We got in trouble for being in the classroom and
escaping fight.
Right.
And being accused of something. Wow. And this is from a teacher.
Yes, from a teacher.
And see, I know parents don't know. They don't have a clue how their child is being treated or reacted towards. I live in the Mission Hills area here in San Diego, and it's predominantly white. And my granddaughter attends the school here, and she relocated her and my daughter. We all did, but I came a year earlier from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And she was in a Montessori school. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain if they're just behind educational wise in Milwaukee or that particular school, or if this school where she's attending at Grant, if it's advanced. But my granddaughter came just not knowing anything. And she was going into it was the middle of the school year, second grade, middle of the school year. Is that right? First grade. And so the teacher sat us down, and I could tell she was nervous as all get out because there were no other brown people in the classroom. She didn't know how to talk to us. She kept looking at me and not my daughter. And it made my daughter even more upset. And they wanted to hold her back, basically. Oh. And so I said, well, I'm an educator, so I would like to know where exactly she is missing it, and then I will work with her. But holding her back is not an option. Right. That's not an option. Exactly. And so sure enough, we got her reading halfway better. And then when it was time to go to move her to second grade, and this was like a week or two before school began.
Oh, wow.
The principal chimed in in an email to my daughter. We need to meet about such and such. Are you kidding me right now? Wait, you waited all summer long? And my granddaughter is tall. Her father is 6'6". So she already looks like she's a fourth grader, you know, and so my daughter just said, no, I was told that there was going to be someone helping her with her reading outside of the classroom. I would like to exhaust all of the resources first, but holding her back is not an option.
Right.
And after I left out of there, I said, they didn't know who they were dealing with. They just thought that we were just some little black folk that didn't know anything about anything. And their parents don't realize it's your choice. You can, and how to advocate. They are not professionals over our children. No. They are educators, but they're not professionals. And now that I'm hearing that racism is alive and well in the school system, we don't even know if they're looking at our children as children first or by their ethnicity first.
Exactly.
So exactly. I get it now. I get it. And it's sad.
And it's a sad thing, you know, because coming from education, coming at it, looking at it as an educator and as not only as an educator, but I want to say I was always very aware that whatever you resist will persist.
Right? Yes.
So when I first became a principal, one of my mentors said to me, the first year you're a principal, don't make waves, just watch the environment, you know, and choose who you're going to protect. And being always an entrepreneur and Education is just another business, people. It's just another business. And the product is the information, right?
Yes.
But the consumer is the child, the student.
The consumer.
And so if the consumer is not happy there, and if we didn't have consumers,
that's right, there would be no business.
You don't have a job. And it was like, don't tell me that every color kid, whether it's yellow, brown, needs to be out of your classroom.
Yes.
Because if you put every kid out of your classroom, you have no customers.
That's right. Why are you in business?
Exactly.
Ooh, that's a good way to look at it, Madi. So it's time to empower our parents. And I think COVID-19 sort of forced us.
Yeah.
To empowering our children's education because they had to stay home. And now they're talking how they're going to go to school half days, fully masked or whatever. And I just told my daughter, I said, I will school her. I will homeschool her. We will get the program because that's not going to be in her best interest at all. But I think personally with COVID-19, with all of the protesting, I believe that's why I'm calling this is definitely a decade of awakening.
Well,
we are all waking up to being better parents, better people. Just like you said, there's some people that they don't even recognize that they're racist and my light just went out. I'm so sorry. Can you still see me?
Yes, I can still see you. We're good.
Okay. They don't realize that they're racist. You know when they're realizing it? When they're posting. And what they're focusing on. And I've learned that now. If your focus has been on the looting and you're not looking at the reason behind the protest, then you might want to look at where your heart is in all of this. Or I had one person, oh my God, I finally had to, I quit arguing with people online. Right. But exactly. One girl said, I guess George Floyd's family received a lot of money through the GoFundMe. Like, for 14 million, something like that. And it's still coming in.
Oh, wow.
And this girl had the audacity to say, what is one family going to do with all that? Why do they need that much money? And if this girl happens to be white with a mixed child. And I'm going, what? And even one of her friends said, I'm surprised you of all people are even saying that. You know, and I said, I have to agree. You have a brown son. If anything happened to, is there a price tag that you can put on your child's life? Plus, this is from the goodness of everybody's heart. They didn't ask for this money. This is the goodness of everyone's heart going, I am so sorry. Would you like to see your child or family member being murdered on national television? You know what I'm saying? So I don't care if we gave them $20 million. No one should have to see their loved one go through that. So then you have to look at the heart of the people. Why would you have that? A problem with them. And then all her other supporters are like, yeah, they don't need that money. And I went to their pages and I'm like, oh my God, they're all racist. They don't even realize that they're racist. Had it been a police officer and his family received $14 million, would we be complaining?
No.
I don't understand. I don't understand how one life can be worth more than the other. So now is an awakening and it's no longer time to be silent.
No.
Choose a side, y'all.
Yes.
Choose a side.
And so for those of us that are here, that we call each other, we're light workers. We have to bring light to what's happening to us and to everybody. And so it's just so important for us to be how can I be of service? Is that question
yes.
that I was,
yes.
how can I be of service?
Yes.
You know, and then most recently I've been into this space of in my meditation where, okay, God, show me who I need to forgive today.
Ooh.
So because I'm not perfect. So, and I want our listeners to understand that I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
I'm not perfect. And there are some, you know, some resentments that I harbor as, you know, as well. And I, but when I have begun to do this, I have felt an awakening. So I will just sit and I will close my eyes and I will just say, Lord, please show me or tell me who am I, who am I to forgive today? That if I forgive, this will allow me more freedom.
I love that. I love that.
And all of a sudden, something will pop in. Somebody, either I'll get a visual of somebody, I'll get a name, I'll get, and then I just, you know, and then it's like, okay, I need to forgive this person. I forgive you. But, you know, it's like forgiving, but, you know, but still holding accountable. Let me give you an example.
Yes.
I still hold you accountable. So my grandmother was murdered in her bed. And I had to be the one to identify it here in San Diego. And at night, her and her husband were shot in the stomach by her stepson.
Over money.
And we became the butts of the media and all kinds of things and dragged through the media like you would not believe. But So an example of learning to forgive was, you know, taking him and saying, you know what, your actions are unforgivable. So I'm not ready to forgive your actions. I'm just thinking this in my head. I'm not ready to forgive your actions. I'm not ready to do this. And I still hold you accountable, but you know what? I do forgive you.
Yes.
The spirit you are.
Yes.
The light that you have inside of you.
But not your actions. And you know what I tell people? Don't confuse your who and your do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who you are is light.
Yeah.
And love, but what you do may not reflect that.
Yeah.
And so you can forgive the action. I mean, you can forgive the who, but right. I don't have to forgive the do, what you've done.
Right.
And people have to understand the power of forgiveness. It's not letting that person off the hook. It's freeing you.
Yeah, exactly.
If you held on to that anger and bitterness and ugliness, you would have cancer right now. You probably wouldn't be here.
Well, I'm a two-time cancer survivor, baby.
But you're a survivor. Yeah. Come on now.
I'm not a survivor. I'm a thriver.
You're a thriver. You released and you let go.
Yeah.
And that's what forgiveness is.
Yeah.
Wow. So am I safe to assume this person is spending his life in jail? Did he get life?
So he was found guilty by reason of insanity. And so he's still in the... wherever they keep these locked up people and that are quote unquote
insane.
So
that stopped him from being in prison with hardcore murderers.
Right. So you know, so it is what it is. So, but you know, it's just like, okay, so when people look at me and I don't know about you, and we'll draw it in, but looks have a lot to do with racism.
Mm-hmm.
People will, and you know, it's just like people will look at me and they'll say, oh, she's got everything. Oh, she has everything. Oh, she's got it all together. She doesn't have to work. She doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, honey, you don't even know what I've been through.
You don't know half of it. No, people put people in boxes.
Yeah.
They look at you. And there is the box of success, so she has no problems. Beautiful, so she has no problems. Whatever, so she has no problems. And I don't understand why people would assume when you put people in boxes, we all have problems. We just all handle them differently.
Yeah.
And we've learned how to use them as stepping stones.
Exactly.
And mine and your goal is to help pull people through that. So we can grow.
Yes.
We can remain and be stagnant, or we can totally go backwards. I know some people that I've known for years that are literally in the same position that they were in when I met them over 20 years ago. It's like, oh my God, when you get stagnant, you're gonna stink. You're gonna start, you know, your thoughts stink, and the whole your world stinks, not the world, right. But your world stinks. And so, yes, being put in that box, and then people put us in a box culturally. Yes. Because my skin is brown. Oh, she's that person.
Right.
Not even getting to know me at all. I'm in their box. And so I just decided, not only am I not in a box, there's not even a box around me. Exactly. There's not even a box that can define me, because I refuse to be defined by your check mark.
Exactly.
And clearly you have too, Miss Angel.
And one of the things I want to clarify is that we're not saying, I don't think it, Danielle, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you and I are saying that that only blacks and browns are we, because I have a friend who was so white that everybody used to call her ghost, but she was one of my best friends, and I saw discrimination and racism there.
Totally.
And so it's here, we're talking about what it means to us.
To us.
I want to make sure that people out there understand that we know it's out there. It's prevalent in all colors.
Yes.
And
we're just calling it what it is. It's hatred and it's fear.
Exactly.
People fear what they don't know, or they think that you think you're better than them. I love when people, oh, she thinks she's better. How do you know what I'm thinking? But the bottom line is, it's fear of anything that's different from them. You're absolutely correct. It is not limited to people of color.
Exactly. And you know what? One of the things I want to share, one of the things in closing that I think is a beautiful exercise that I did with my students, my college kids. So with my college kids, there is, I go through in my yoga theory classes, I go through ahimsa, which is means practicing nonviolence to every living thing, actively acting in consideration toward others, right? It's called ahimsa. Ooh. And so one of the exercises that I have them do is that I have them, you know, blindfold, and do not speak, and everybody is on, you know, everybody's on an equal, once you cover the eyes and you cover the mouth, everybody is on equal ground. And here's the thing that we have to do, is that we need to go, and heart to heart, we just give each other a big hug. No speaking, no knowing who you're hugging, just ooh, what we're doing is just communing heart to heart. And so it just becomes this most powerful. I have at the beginning, I have all this resistance, right? This takes a while, because I tell them, you are not allowed to let go of the person until both of your energies feel like they've received and given at the same time, and then you will know, both of you will know when it's time to release. And so, you know, it takes a while for me to say, we're not doing it right. We're not doing it right. And so, but by the end of 40 minutes, you know, by the end of 40 minutes, people are staying together and are communing and hugging. And so I have people crying because they haven't had so much love communication. I want to say love connection with so many people. Now, if we all did
that,
you know, it's just like, the best place to be is blindfolded and muted.
And you know what? Now you're dealing with people energetically, which is what we all are.
Yeah.
We are one big ball of energy.
Exactly. That's it.
I am going to use that practice, Madi. That is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Oh, it's amazing to watch. It's amazing to watch. I always end up with tears on that day. I always tell the kids, I said, the girls are like, I said, bring your extra makeup, babies, because I promise you that you're going to need to re-put your makeup on after this. And at first, I get a lot of resistance, but then afterwards, I mean, I even have big burly guys crying, you know, and it's just amazing to see the melting, and talk about a melting pot, melting of soul just coming together.
I just got this, and I know we have to go because I have chills not thinking about it. You actually help return them to their original self, which is love.
Yeah.
And so because I can't see and I can't speak and my inner being only is love,
right?
I'm hooking up with another loving soul, no prejudgment, nothing.
Yep.
Wow. What a takeaway.
Yeah, so let's wish that upon everybody.
Yes.
And let's just dear Lord, just give us the
yes.
light that we need in order to see through our soul, our heart, and let us feel the energy together as one.
Yes.
In you know, and I say namaste, which the meaning to namaste is the spirit, the light that shines inside of me. Honors, cherishes, and respects the light, the feeling, the soul that shines inside
yes.
of you. Namaste. Danielle, this has been an amazing time. We went over, but you know what? It's okay. And so we touched on some things. So hopefully some of our listeners speaking, I'm going to ask that you guys leave us comments. Danielle and I will actually personally answer your guys' comments.
Yes.
You know, remember to follow her at Mama D. Is it at Mama D?
At Mama D. Rogers. Is it Mama D. Rogers on
yes.
Instagram?
Yes.
Or Facebook is just Danielle Rogers.
Okay, great. And then follow me at MartyAngel_ELC for Empowering Latina Coach. And that's
yes.
where I am everywhere. So thank you so much. And I look forward to the next time. Guys, we're going to come on and we're going to be talking about colorism. The next
Woo-hoo.
Time we come on. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Madi.
Thank you.